The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
And so we say good afternoon, Dr. Brittany Dean.
Good afternoon, Beast, and good afternoon to all our listeners out there. And of course, today we have a very interesting topic. We are going to continue along the lines of our lung health and respiratory infections. But today we're going to be talking about something that really is prevalent and really affects a lot of smokers out there, and that is chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, or for shorthand, we usually call that COPD. So if you or you know someone who has been diagnosed with COPD, this is a very important topic for us to discuss and for others to learn about it as well. But like you rightly said, Bees, we talk about any medical topics here. So feel free to call in, send your WhatsApps, and we'll have a conversation.
All right, folks, so first of all, what exactly is COPD and why is it so important for people to know about it?
So COPD, or chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, is actually a group of lung conditions that causes, you know, many different symptoms like breathing difficulties. And that would include two specific diseases called chronic bronchitis and emphysema. Now, what tends to happen in COPD, there is a long-term obstruction, and what that does is it obstructs airflow or makes it hard for air to flow in and out of the lungs. And remember, we do need that airflow so that we can get that oxygen within our lungs so that it can be distributed and used in all the different parts of our bodies. But if it is very difficult because there's some sort of obstruction now for that air to flow in and out of our lungs, it's going to result in many different symptoms. So people usually experience breathlessness, they will have a chronic cough, and they will find that they are spitting up a lot of mucus, or they have a lot of mucus production. And in a lot of the patients that are diagnosed with chronic bronchitis or COPD, they would usually describe them coughing up, they would say, buckets of this mucus, because the mucus production, because they have this obstruction within their lungs, they're not able to properly facilitate the filtering of these waste products. Now, COPD is what we call a progressive disease. And what I mean by that is that over time, it does get worse. And it's actually one of the leading causes of mortality or deaths worldwide. So it really is important for us to talk about COPD, raise awareness about it, because we need to diagnose it early so that we can have an early intervention, and that can significantly improve somebody's quality of life. And of course, because it's progressive, we want to slow down the progression of the disease. But many people tend to dismiss, you know, the early symptoms of COPD, like they may get the persistent coughing, or they may get slight breathlessness, and they will dismiss it as, you know, normal aging or seasonal allergies or having a cold or flu. And if they are dismissing it, they're not going to get diagnosed early, and that is going to delay treatment. So we need to understand what COPD is so that individuals will seek their timely medical attention. And of course, they will make the proper lifestyle changes so that we can prevent any sort of complications in the long run.
All right, so what are the most common symptoms of COPD that people should look out for?
So there are some what we call hallmark symptoms of COPD. So if people present with these things, we are most likely going to diagnose them with COPD. And these would be things like persistent breathlessness. So it is very difficult for them to breathe. They may feel out of breath for most of their day. They may have a chronic cough, and they will have this excess sputum or mucus production. And initially, individuals may start to notice that they will have difficulty catching their breath during physical activity. So say you are exercising or you're running or cycling, you may find that you are getting difficulty to get back to your normal pace of breathing after these strenuous exercises. And some people will dismiss that as they're not fit enough or they lack some sort of fitness and they may need to up their cardio, etc. But a lot of people a lot of smokers may probably be in the early stages of developing COPD. Now, as the disease itself progresses, that breathlessness becomes even more frequent, and even during rest or even during minor activities, they may find it difficult to catch their breath. So other people may have other symptoms as well. So people with COPD, they may notice themselves wheezing, or they will get tightness in their chest, and they may even get frequent respiratory infections. And of course, fatigue, or one of those systemic symptoms, that is also common because the body is trying to work harder now to compensate for that breathlessness. It is going to work harder now to try to breathe. So it is essential that people who are experiencing these symptoms, they recognize these symptoms very early and they consult their doctors so that you get an early diagnosis, and that will lead to better management. Now, if you get a misdiagnosis or if you have neglect of any of these symptoms, that is often going to lead to a lot of complications or advanced stages of COPD where the treatment options will become a little more limited.
And what causes a COPD, and is it something people can prevent?
So the primary cause of COPD, when somebody has long-term that damage your lungs and your airways, and the leading risk factor is cigarette smoking, because cigarette smokers are constantly exposing their respiratory tract and their lungs to the pollutants that are in the cigarette smoke. So both active smokers and those who are exposed to secondhand smoke, like we talked about yesterday, are at risk for developing COPD. And of course, there are other causes as well that we have to mention. So if you have prolonged exposure to air pollution, if you have prolonged exposure to occupational dust or chemicals, and sometimes, in very rare cases, there's actually a genetic condition that can cause COPD called alpha-1 antitrypsin deficiency. But that is, of course, in the rare cases. But in the most common cases that we do see, and we do see COPD commonly in the hospital setting, it's really because of cigarette smoking. And prevention is largely possible by avoiding these risk factors. Smoking cessation is actually the most effective way to reduce the risk of developing COPD. And of course, workplaces can start to take measures to minimize the exposure of these harmful chemicals and irritants to their workers. And of course, additionally, we want to start improving our indoor air quality and reducing the exposure that we have to secondhand smoke or even to certain fuels or biomass fuels. And sometimes these are the things that we commonly use in our cooking gas, etc. And preventing all of our exposure to these harmful toxins, the harmful irritants, and especially, the smoking cessation, that is going to play largely in us avoiding our chances of getting COPD.
All right. So, of course, folks, we'll be taking some of your calls in just a short while. 625-2257 for any of your medical questions, and 3061065 on the WhatsApp. So you mentioned smoking. So how does smoking contribute to COPD, and are there other risk factors people might know about?
So what happens with smoking? Remember, we discussed this a little bit yesterday. Smoking and the chemical components of smoking tend to damage the lungs by causing inflammation. And what that inflammation does is it actually destroys these tiny little air sacs in the lungs that are responsible for exchanging the oxygen and the carbon dioxide. Remember, we breathe in oxygen because that is what our body needs to function on a daily basis. And we exhale that carbon dioxide because if that builds up too much in our system becomes what we call acidic. And that acidic system is not conducive to working or doing our daily routines optimally. So we need to get rid of that carbon dioxide within our bodies. And to do that, we have these tiny little air sacs in our lungs that facilitate that exchange of oxygen to carbon dioxide. So what smoking does is it starts to destroy these tiny little air sacs within the lungs. And it also reduces our lung elasticity, meaning that it is very difficult for smokers' lungs to expand fully with air compared to a non-smoker's lungs. And this is going to lead to diseases like COPD, which we get things like chronic bronchitis. And chronic bronchitis actually narrows the airways of persons suffering with this disease, and emphysema, which is the damaging of those tiny little air sacs. And those are both components of COPD itself. The more someone smokes and the longer that they do it, the greater the risk of developing COPD. Other risk factors, like I mentioned, would be the occupational exposure to dust, chemicals, and fumes. And of course, that prolonged exposure to indoor air pollution, particularly in the poorly ventilated spaces where you would have, you know, that biomass fuels from cooking gas like wood or coal, all those things that are used for cooking. If you have a poorly ventilated space, all of that can contribute to your lungs becoming a little bit fragile and, of course, developing COPD. Even genetics can play a role. Like I said, there's a rare genetic condition that can cause some people to develop COPD and leads to an increased vulnerability to lung damage in the long run.
All right, we're taking a break right now to take some calls. Let's take a call right now. Any of your medical questions? Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, and special good afternoon, Dr. Brittany.
Good afternoon.
I'm in my 70s. Is it abnormal that you don't have a proper, even at my age, I don't have a proper breathing rhythm? That is one. And I have a trace of bronchitis, nothing serious. I don't cough up any yellow or mucus or anything, but I was diagnosed with that trace of bronchitis. So would you say that is causing the indifferent breathing rhythm and the difficulty? I'm aware of every breath I take because, you know, mm-hmm. it sometimes gets difficult, especially now with the Sahara and so on. So I'll listen mm-hmm. to you, okay? Thanks.
Okay, so of course, if you do have bronchitis, even if it is not very severe, yes, that can change your breathing patterns. But as you get older as well, breathing patterns tend to change because you get physiological changes with age. So your lungs are going to lose some elasticity. You will get some weakness in your respiratory muscles. And that little tiny sacs, you know, they reduce in their surface area. So you will get a little more shallow breathing. Your respiratory rate may increase because you are trying to compensate for that shallow breathing. And some people do get shortness of breath as they get older. But there are certain factors that will exacerbate those breathing difficulties. And COPD and that chronic bronchitis will be one of them. So it could be a combination of just the physiological changes as well as the chronic bronchitis, because even if you have it in a mild sense, it can cause some changes within your lungs.
All right, another question coming in here. Good day. Is there any connection or link with someone with a weak muscular disease and the COPD. Please explain how or if there is any difference.
So when we have weak muscular diseases, usually that affects the entire body. So things like muscular dystrophy or ALS or even myasthenia gravis, those can impair your respiratory muscles. So your diaphragm, the muscles between the ribs, and even the accessory muscles of respiration. And when those muscles are weak, the lungs themselves cannot fully expand and contract. So people will get the shallow breathing and they will have a reduction in their oxygen intake, and it will be difficult for them to expel that carbon dioxide. So you get what we call a mechanical limitation that can mimic, or if you've had COPD before, it can worsen the symptoms of COPD. But we don't really see the muscular disease itself leading to COPD. Remember, COPD is really caused by you inhaling some sort of harmful chemical or irritant. The muscular disease is just going to weaken the respiratory muscles and even sometimes reduce the elasticity of your lungs. So it will worsen the symptoms of COPD, but it's not really a cause for COPD.
All right, another question. What would you recommend to help a person manage osteoarthritis?
So in terms of osteoarthritis recommendations, I mean, there are certain things that you can try over the counter, but of course I can't really list anything, but NSAIDs can help if you are having chronic pain. Those are the non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs. You can get that over the counter. We usually don't recommend that you take that in excess, because NSAIDs do have a tendency to also cause acid reflux. So we usually try to recommend that with some acid reflux medications together. But if there are certain lifestyle remedies. If you are overweight or obese, you need to look at weight management, because those excessive weight places additional stress on your weight-bearing joints. Even low-impact activities like swimming or cycling or walking or yoga, those can strengthen your muscles around the joints and improve your flexibility. And strength training in the proper way with a proper personal trainer can help you to support and stabilize your joints. And of course, you're looking at anti-inflammatories into your diet, your fruits, your vegetables, your whole grains, your nuts, your fatty fishes. All of that reduces inflammation, and of course, try to include foods that have lots of vitamin D and calcium. So dairy, fortified foods, leafy greens, all of that supports bone health. If you are getting any sort of pain and swelling in the joints, heat and cold therapy, heat packs can ease the joint stiffness and improve the blood flow. The cold therapy can reduce any sort of swelling and numb the area to alleviate the pain. But there are supplements that you can take, like the glucosamine and the chondroitin, and they help to support your cartilage and the omega-3 fatty acids as well.
All right, I saw a call coming in there, 625-2257. We'll take one more call, one more question, before we return to our topic of COPD. All right, 625-2257, or WhatsApp us at 306-1065. You're listening to The Lunchtime Doctor. We're live, of course, on Freedom 106.5 FM, Sangit 106.1, and Sky 99.5 with Dr. Brittany Dean. All right, so we don't see the call coming in, so we move on. How can someone who has never smoked still develop COPD? If so, how?
Yes, remember, non-smokers can also develop COPD. Smoking is the leading cause, and about 30% of all COPD cases occur in non-smokers. So factors like I spoke about, the prolonged exposure to air pollution, the secondhand smoke, the occupational hazards like the dust and the fumes, all of that contribute to the condition. And even in our countries, like the developing countries, the indoor air pollution from cooking and heating, that is also a significant risk factor. And remember, the genetics can play a role in very rare cases, and it will predispose some persons to COPD even in the absence of smoking or environmental exposures. So it's about knowing the risk factors, and the main risk factors, like I said, would be smoking, the exposure to the air pollutants, and the occupational hazards, so the dust and the fumes. So yes, non-smokers can develop COPD as well, but we more than likely do see COPD in persons who are smokers.
All right, so we continue with your lunchtime, doctor. Right here, let's get another question. What's the difference between COPD and asthma? How can someone tell the two apart?
So, I mean, COPD and asthma are both chronic lung conditions, but they are going to differ in their cause, their progression, and their management. COPD is primarily caused by that long-term exposure to lung irritants, so the smoking, and that is typically seen in older adults. And it is progressive, meaning that it can get worse over time, and it's largely irreversible, meaning that it is very, very difficult in the late stages of COPD to actually reverse the damage that COPD has caused. Now, in contrast to that, asthma is more of an inflammatory condition of the airways, and that will often begin in childhood, and that will be triggered by allergens or even exercise or stress. And the asthma symptoms can be reversible with the proper treatment. I mean, the symptoms of both COPD and asthma tend to overlap, the wheezing, and the patient have episodic symptoms that improve with medication, while COPD symptoms are more constant and they get worse over time. Now, we use a specific lung function test called spirometry to help differentiate the two of them. And remember, I talked about spirometry yesterday, and we would usually see that in persons who have had any sort of abdominal surgery. We try to get them to open up their airways by breathing into this device to look at how much the lung expands and how much volume is in the lungs. So spirometry is one of those tests that we actually use to differentiate between COPD and asthma in a patient who it is very difficult to tell the difference in.
I do see some calls coming in here. We will be taking that break in just a short while to take some more of your calls and your questions, people, so don't worry. Right, so how does COPD affect daily life, and what challenges do people with COPD face?
Well, I mean, COPD can be a very significant hindrance to somebody's daily life, especially if the symptoms become severe, and of course it does get worse over time without having the proper management. It will significantly impact a person's daily life, because it's going to reduce their ability to perform basic tasks, especially if those tasks require any sort of physical effort. So climbing the stairs or even carrying groceries, those things become very difficult for patients with COPD. That breathlessness can lead to them taking frequent breaks during those activities. And of course, they may get very fatigued, and they will have a decline in their overall mobility, because they will find that moving more often actually causes them to become very breathless. So now they are putting a strain on their bodies because they are unable to perform daily tasks and they are unable to perform physical activity. And of course, psychologically, it is going to have an impact. COPD can lead to anxiety and depression because you have a constant struggle to breathe and you are going to have a fear of exacerbations. Socially, individuals may tend to isolate themselves because they may have they may feel embarrassed or they may have some sort of shame surrounding the fact that they are coughing or wheezing all the time. So it is important for persons to know about the symptoms, to know that they need medical attention, and to have the proper management, because that effective management, including things like pulmonary rehabilitation, is going to help a lot of patients regain some sort of independence and improve their quality of life.
Right, and is there a way to know if you're at risk of CPOD before symptoms appear?
So if you are a smoker, you definitely know that you are at risk for developing COPD. If you are constantly exposed to occupational hazards, or you have any sort of prolonged exposure to air pollution, those are key indicators of COPD risk. And of course, if you know your family history and you have a genetic predisposition to that alpha-1 antitrypsin deficiency, that also suggests a higher susceptibility. Spirometry, which is that non-invasive test that measures your lung function, can also detect airflow limitation even before noticeable symptoms appear. And it is important for you to have those routine checkups, especially if you are at high risk, especially if you are a smoker, those become essential. If you are experiencing occasional breathlessness, a chronic cough, or you have frequent respiratory infections, it is definitely in your best interest to go to your doctor very early, because early intervention, like I keep stressing, can slow that disease progression. There are people who tend to have to be on constant support for COPD because they've let it get to the point where it's so severe and it has progressed so severely that we can't do anything but support their lungs.
All right, so we'll take a break right now to answer some questions at 625-2257, and of course on the WhatsApp at 3061065. Any of your medical questions, of course, you're listening to the Lunchtime Doctor. Right, so good day, doctor. I have an infection in my fingernail. Anytime I use medication, it cures. After a month or so, it came back. The doctor said it's a chronic disease. This is going on for the past 25 years and more. Is there anything I can do?
Well, the thing is, if the infection, you see, fingernail infections, particularly the ones that become chronic, can be caused by a variety of different factors. So it could be bacterial, it could be fungal, it could even be underlying health issues. So things like psoriasis or eczema, those things actually do have fingernail infections associated with it. And I mean, depending on the type of infection, it may be difficult to source why it becomes chronically infected. Maybe you have some sort of underlying condition that you are not aware of that causes you to have a compromised immunity and causes that those fingernail infections. Unfortunately, if you are taking the same medication and it's clearing up, it depends on what type it is. Like, it could be bacterial or fungal. I'm not too sure what it is. But you can possibly, if you really want to know the cause, it could be something systemic. So maybe have your doctor take a full history and do a full workup in terms of if it is some sort of immune disease, things like psoriasis or eczema. Sometimes things happen out of the blue, and in some patients, they may just have this one fingernail that becomes chronically infected, and there's not much you can do except treat the infections.
All right, so should they do like a blood test?
Well, the doctor will assess accordingly, depending on other symptoms that the person may have.
All right, okay, let's take a call here. Hello, good afternoon, welcome.
Hello.
Yes, good afternoon.
Hello. Yes, I called yesterday and left a message, so I'm not sure if it was heard. And I also just tuned in, so I don't know if this issue was addressed. But I just thought that since we're talking about lung health, it might be advisable for your doctor to speak to the population about powder and masks, because quite often in our bands, especially our pan bands, we have a lot of powder, and there's like a cloud of this dust, and people are inhaling this all along for a couple of days. And I heard yesterday a mention of someone with Johnson & Johnson. So I thought I'd bring this and hear what the doctor would have to say and how she can help educate our population on this possible health issue. Thank you.
All right. So what is...
Right. So that is a good point. Mm-hmm. And remember, during Carnival or during even any of our fets or anything, we have people that are in large crowds that are very close together. And the way that powder itself affects the lungs, those things can be easily inhaled into our respiratory tract, and that can reach our lungs very deeply. And if you have prolonged exposure, it starts to irritate your airways, triggers inflammation, and in some cases lead to infections. And the lungs may react to those inhaled particles by producing some sort of mucus or coughing, or even triggering immune defenses. And some of those powders can actually weaken the lungs' ability to clear out those harmful particles, and it will increase somebody's susceptibility to infections. Now, a lot of people may not inhale those powders for long periods of time, but if you're constantly going to the different fets or you're constantly jumping up somewhere that has a lot of powder, yes, you are exposing yourself and your lungs to these powders for long periods of time. And on top of that, like I said, we are all in very enclosed spaces, in big bunches, and you never know who has a respiratory infection. So after Carnival, we do see a surge in people having a flu or a virus, because you are exposing yourself to a lot of irritants. First of all, that is impairing the lungs' ability to properly filter out any sort of pathogens. And of course, you have that increased susceptibility to infection. So if somebody comes and they have some sort of respiratory infection, you are going to probably pick up that infection as well. So, I mean, it is a hazard to a lot of people, but I'm not too sure how we can address that, because, you know, a lot of different bands, they definitely, that is part of their trademark or their hallmark, using powder or using any sort of those little glitter things all over. So it is something that people need to be aware of and maybe take their individual precautions to avoid any sort of respiratory infection or any sort of compromise to their lung health.
And what about using powder on babies? I mean, it's not just adults use powder, babies as well, and children.
I mean, yes. Well, of course, yeah. But, you know, you're not going to be putting it for the baby to inhale. So if you are using those little bit of powders on babies, you're just going to use a little bit on their tummy. You're not going to put it anywhere near their face or anywhere that they can inhale it. And some people put it to prevent diaper rash, etc. So, of course, we advise do not put any sort of harmful irritant that baby can inhale near to baby's face.
All right, folks, about 80 minutes away from 1 o'clock. We invite anyone to more of your calls at 625-2257. And, of course, WhatsApp numbers at 306-1065. I would like the doctor's office number. I would like to visit her if she doesn't want to be around on the air, if we could send it on the phone, right? So people are asking, do you take visits, Dr. Brittany?
Yeah, yes. So I can send the office number to the person. So I'll send it to you, Beast.
All right, no problem. Hi, Doc. For the past 10 years, I have been a blood test. I did a blood test every year, and my GGT always coming back high. January was, 120. December, 200. Right? The doctors told me not to worry about it. I do not drink alcohol. Should I really not bother?
So, I mean, GGT is very long word, gamma glutamyl transferase, and that is one of the enzymes in your blood that is primarily found in the liver or your bile ducts or your kidneys, and it does play a role in breaking down certain toxins and drugs in the body. So we do see GGT being elevated in people who drink alcohol excessively, and sometimes it could be if they are exposed to certain toxins. I mean, if it is only 120, usually we would see 10 to 71 for males, and that is usually the average, but it is not exponentially elevated for us to be very worried about it. So it's probably just one of those things that are increased in your blood. You know, it's the average that we usually have is usually the average of the population, but some people may have a little bit higher than what the average reading is on a blood test, and that is usually okay, especially if you are not an alcohol drinker. So we usually do see people who are drinking alcohol excessively with an exponentially high GGT, but it's not something that you should be very worried about.
All right. Once again, folks, you're listening to The Lunchtime Doctor, Dr. Brittany Dean, on Freedom 106.5 FM, Sangit 106.1, and Sky 99.5. 15 minutes away. Man, hello, good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I have a question to the doctor. Usually, when I cough, I don't have a cold. But most of the time when I cough, I see something like a light inside. I don't know why. It is coughing, and the light is coming on.
I didn't get the last part.
So she's coughing, and like there's a light coming on?
A light?
Like a red light, tapping. When I cough, it goes on for a while, and then stop, and then turn again.
A light, you said? Like a light?
Yes, it's sparking.
When you cough, there's a light?
Yes. Okay. I don't understand.
Is that?
Because that goes on for years now. It keeps going and coming.
I'm not too sure about the light.
It's sparking then.
Spark, there's a spark?
Like a flash,
Okay.
You understand what I mean? Like a flash. Cough, I see a flash. Cough again, a flash. I don't have the cold, but I don't know why.
I don't really understand the question, but sometimes you cough because you get a trigger to cough. So that is your body's way of expelling any sort of pollutants that may have gotten into your respiratory tract. So maybe it could be that you are surrounding something that, you know, has some sort of pollutant, and you've inhaled that, and your body is expelling whatever pollutant has gotten into your respiratory tract. I'm not too sure about the light or the spark, but it could also be, you know, there are nerves connected to your body, so you may be just experiencing some sort of vasovagal, you know, symptom, meaning that you cough and you probably experience another symptom somewhere else in your body as well. And that is just normal reflexes throughout the body. People do have different reflexes. But coughing without the cold means that there's some sort of irritant within your respiratory tract. And coughing without the cold in other instances, especially if you have risk factors, could mean something like COPD.
All right, and getting back to the COPD, what role does exercise play in managing COPD? And are there specific types of exercises that are safe and effective?
Right, so exercise is actually one of those key components in COPD management because it is going to help to improve cardiovascular fitness, strengthen the respiratory muscles, and of course, reduce shortness of breath during the activity. So we usually try to incorporate low impact activities such as walking or cycling or swimming. Those are what we often recommend for persons with mild COPD. And there are also pulmonary rehabilitation programs. Those are particularly beneficial because what it provides is supervised exercise routines that are tailored to that patient's specific condition. However, you know, before any person with COPD starts any sort of exercise regime, you need to consult your doctor so you can assess how severe the COPD is and if it requires any sort of management to take on that severity before you start any sort of exercise program.
All right, and how can diet also impact COPD? Are there any specific foods that help improve breathing or reduce symptoms?
So diet is also going to play an important role in COPD management. So the same sort of diet that we talk about for every single thing, that balanced diet that will have the fruits and the vegetables and the lean proteins and the healthy fats will help to reduce inflammation and improve your energy levels overall. So the omega-3 fatty acids will be especially important in somebody's diet if they suffer with COPD. So the fatty fishes like the mackerel and the sardines and the salmon, that is going to help to combat any sort of inflammation in the lungs. Now, conversely, the processed and the salty foods, those should be limited. So the excess sodium is going to lead to fluid retention within the body, and that will help to worsen breathing. So if you have fluid retention in the lungs, particularly in persons with COPD, that breathlessness can get very severe in as little as one day. So maintaining a healthy weight also is crucial, and being underweight can actually weaken the respiratory muscles, while being overweight can strain the lungs. So you have to maintain a healthy balance of weight, or the average weight for your height is going to be optimal for COPD COPD management.
10 minutes away from 1 o'clock, folks, the lunchtime doctor. Let's take a call. Hello, good afternoon.
Hi. Hello.
Yes.
Listen, I forgot what I told about coughing and seeing the flash. So one when I got to sleep, lie down in bed at night most of the time.
Please turn on your radio when you're calling, please, miss. Whatever, we understand what you're saying. She says it happens when she's lying down in the bed most of the time. Lying down in the bed.
So if you are lying down, remember that your anatomy changes standing up versus lying down. And especially if you're seeing flashes at night, that can actually be some sort of eye issue. So I do definitely suggest that you go and get your eye checked out. There are different eye diseases, things like retinal tears or detachment, that can actually cause flashes within your eye. And that coughing can be a trigger for any sort of eye disease that you may be experiencing, especially if it is a retinal tear. So please go and get your eye checked out. And of course, lying down as well is going to make it much more difficult for your body to expel any sort of pollutants. So coughing is definitely your body's way of trying to get rid of anything that you may be inhaling in your bedroom through your pillow, through poor ventilation. But I definitely think, especially if you're seeing flashes or sparks within your eye, you have to go and get your eye checked out, because the coughing could just be a trigger for something that is going on in the eye.
All right. So are there any lifestyle habits that can slow the progression of COPD?
So definitely quitting smoking is the most effective way to slow COPD progression. So yesterday somebody asked if, you know, if they quit smoking at after 20 years, if it's going to make a difference. Yes, it's going to make a difference, especially if you have been diagnosed with COPD. That is going to slow the progression of the disease. And even if you have not been diagnosed with COPD, it is going to lessen your risk of developing COPD. So quitting smoking is definitely at the top of the list. Avoid your exposure to secondhand smoke pollutants and occupational irritants is also essential. And staying physically active and following that healthy diet is going to improve your overall health and lung function. Vaccination, primarily for those like influenza and pneumonia, those are also going to be crucial for COPD patients for preventing those infections that can worsen the COPD symptoms. And if you are prescribed any sort of medications for COPD, adhering to those prescribed medications and, of course, adhering to your regular checkups with your doctor are going to be key components of managing the disease effectively.
All right, folks, 6 minutes away from 1 o'clock. You listen to The Lunchtime Doctor. And does air quality and pollution, just like we were talking yesterday with the lungs, make COPD worse? And how can people protect themselves from environmental triggers?
So yes, the poor air quality and, of course, air pollution can significantly worsen those COPD symptoms. So pollutants like vehicle exhaust, industrial emissions, and even household irritants such as smoke from cooking or cleaning chemicals can trigger flare-ups and exacerbate breathing difficulties for those suffering with COPD. And prolonged exposure to polluted air can actually accelerate the lung damage and the progression of the disease. So in order to protect themselves, individuals with COPD definitely need to limit their outdoor activities on days with high pollution levels, especially now that we are having the Sahara dust. Limit your exposure to outdoor air. And if you can, start using air purifiers indoors and ensure proper ventilation in the homes so that you can reduce your exposure to irritants. And if you do have COPD masks, particularly those that are designed to filter out the fine particles like the N95 masks, can provide an added layer of protection when you are in polluted environments.
And how can family and friends support someone living with COPD in terms of emotional and practical help?
So living with COPD can be very challenging and, you know, requiring that emotional and practical support from loved ones can definitely make a big difference. So family members can assist by encouraging and participating in the healthy habits, like joining the person in a light exercise routine or helping to prepare a nutritious meal. And on a practical level, they can even help to manage tasks that may be physically demanding for the individual. So the grocery shopping or cleaning in some aspects. And emotionally, providing that listening ear and encouraging open communication about fears or frustrations is crucial. COPD is something that can lead to feelings of isolation or anxiety or depression. So it's essential to create a supportive environment. A lot of people tend to think that COPD only manifests as physical symptoms, but there is an emotional and mental component that is attached to it. And people tend to underestimate that, how much a listening ear or encouragement, how much support that can provide for somebody that is living with COPD. And there are even COPD support groups that will help people with COPD connect with others facing those similar challenges. And that can help the individual feel less alone in their fight against COPD.
All right, and our final question, what advice do you have for someone listening who might be experiencing symptoms of COPD but hasn't yet seen a doctor?
So if you are experiencing persistent breathlessness, a chronic cough, or frequent respiratory infections, you need to seek medical attention as soon as possible. These symptoms are not normal, even for smokers or older adults, and early diagnosis can make a significant difference in managing the disease and preventing any sort of complications. And of course, you need to not delay your visit to the doctor or delay your diagnosis, because like I said, COPD is progressive and it will worsen over time without the proper intervention. So early detection is going to allow for you to have better treatment options. And those things would include the lifestyle modifications, the medications, and the pulmonary rehabilitation programs. So the earlier that you take action, the better your quality of life will be in the long term.
All right, Doug, that's great. We do have a couple more seconds. So COPD, we're talking for it again. And just explain to them what this is, the term COPD means again.
So COPD stands for chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, and it consists of a group of lung conditions called chronic bronchitis and emphysema.
All right, folks, and we'll stop that smoking if you can. And for those who think vaping is just as healthy, can vaping affect your COPD as well, be one of the causes?
Yes, vaping can lead to COPD. We don't have a wide range of research on it yet, but it is going to cause some sort of inflammation in the lungs that can lead to the same symptoms and turn of the symptoms.
Yes, so you've been listening, folks, to another edition of The Lunchtime Doctor.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio, Freedom 106.5.